This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you went to college, how much of a role did liberal arts play in your education? Did you take classes in English, history, political science, philosophy? Did you get a degree in a liberal arts field? How's that worked out for you? In a world increasingly dominated by science and technology, some believe liberal arts have less and less value. This hour's guests would beg to differ. One, a business leader who co-founded a Virginia-based company that sells its products around the world. Another, an employment specialist who for years now has run her own staffing agency. The third, a political scientist who returned to his alma mater to take the reins as university president. They'll have much to say about the value of certain types of learning in the workplace and in life. But we also want to hear what you think. So your invitation to educate us about liberal arts will commence right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. English, history, philosophy, political science. Are liberal arts degrees of value in today's world? If so, what is that value? Got an opinion? You're welcome to join us at 888-WMRA-TALK for this hour's discussion. That's 888-967-2825. A little later in the show, we expect to be talking with a Virginia-based senior recruiter for one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies, where you might think education in science and technology would be all important, but she may have some surprises for us. First, however, here with me in the Insight Studio, the president of Washington and Lee University, Ken Ruscio. Dr. Ruscio, welcome.
It's good to be here, Tom.
Also here, the founder and president of Charlottesville-based Robbins Staffing Solutions, Joyce Robbins. Welcome back to the Insight Studios.
Thank you so much.
Plus, an architect who co-founded a hugely successful language teaching company, serving for many years as president and chairman of Rosetta Stone, Eugene Stoltzfus. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Joyce Robbins, let's turn to you first. You've been helping people find work for many years now. For someone with a liberal arts degree, is there a chance of landing a good job any more or less difficult today than it's been in the past when you compare them, say, to someone who has a completely different kind of educational background?
I would say yes, it is more difficult today, simply because, one, the economy, but number two, employers are geared more to looking for very, very specific people, or at least the majority of the, or a lot of the employers I deal with. Although I still want to think that it's still 50-50, you know, but employers that I deal with, they want the specific skill set. So they always say, we would like to have a degree in, well, let's say accounting, because we do specialize in finance and accounting. So they will say, I would like to have a management degree or accounting degree, or something very relevant to that.
Ken Ruscio, before I ask you as a university president the next obvious question, I should back up for a moment, it occurs to me, and ask, in your view, when we say liberal arts, what are we talking about?
Well, I think we're talking about certain subjects, to be sure, Tom, many of the ones that you mentioned earlier, history, philosophy, various others that are in their literature. But really, in the end, I think it's mostly about an approach to learning. It's because subject matter doesn't stay static. The study of literature is very different now than it was years ago. The study of history is different. So a lot of what it is taking a perspective on knowledge, taking a perspective on information. And really, the subject matter is the means to the end rather than the end.
So when someone asks you about the value of a liberal arts education, what do you say?
Well, I say it really is a broad spectrum of values, not a particular value. Certainly, we want our students at Washington and Lee to lead a life of economic self-sufficiency. And they do. They go off and they're very successful finding jobs. But it really is also about why they want a particular kind of job, why they want a particular kind of life, what is the purpose in their life, what is the meaning in their life. And the way they establish that is they have conversations with people like Homer, who wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey, or philosophers like Socrates and Aristotle. It's not just about a particular job and a particular way of making a living, but it's about why, and it's about forming a commitment to something that goes beyond just the paycheck.
Architect Eugene Stoltz-Fuchs, I see you making notes, so I'm guessing you have ideas already to jump in with. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Tom. Yes, the conversation, you know, this conversation can go a lot of directions. It's a big topic, as we were saying before we came on. You know, we can talk about this for an hour or maybe for a semester. I sometimes say to, I've said to my staff, this is now in the architecture business, you know, we design buildings, we design urban environments, urban design studies. We design and make furniture for sale. But what we're really making is ourselves. What we're really making is what is being grown in the crucible of the work environment is people. When you look at what is needed to have a successful creative office, a successful creative business like Rosetta Stone or an architectural firm, you want to have all the ideas that can be generated. You want them to be brought to the table for everyone else to look at and to be traded on, to be acted on, to be to bring results from the other people. In other words, you want them to make a contribution. And you're not so much interested in exactly who said what or who came up with what idea, but what you're interested in is the best idea. And for that to really be at the forefront, people have to be willing to put out ideas that they're not going to defend necessarily. In other words, they're not identified with the idea. It's just an idea. It came to their mind. It comes out into the group. Other people react to it. And out of that kind of atmosphere, you generate really the best ideas.
Eugene, it's hard to believe that there'd be anybody listening who has not heard of Rosetta Stone, but it's possible. It's also possible that there are some who have heard of it who don't exactly know what it is. So let's do some clarifications there. The company that your brother and a colleague co-founded, and you participated in the founding as well, got started in the early 1990s?
Early 1990s was when my brother and my brother-in-law, my brother Alan, my brother-in-law John Fairfield, first were able to develop a little prototype that worked. The idea actually went back to 1984. Computers were in their infancy then, but my brother had a vision of using pictures and a game-like environment to teach language.
So in essence, this was a company that was based on a new kind of computer technology that would teach people how to speak a language that they yearned to speak, but they hadn't succeeded very well before in the traditional learning environments of learning a different language.
It was the computer's ability to handle sound, text, and pictures. The sheer volume of data that kept computers from being able to do this in 1984.
You actually came up with the name for the company.
Yes, I was trying to think of a classical reference to language and the key to breaking the code, let's say, which is really what learning a language is for every individual, but the key to new languages. And I don't know if I had in the back of my head the Rosetta Stone or if it really was as methodical as it appeared to me, but I was saying to myself, what's a timeless reference to language acquisition? And Rosetta Stone popped in my head. And it was so apropos because one set of meaning, three different texts. And with Rosetta Stone, we had basically a template of meaning, and we were able to teach eventually 30 languages laid over top of that same template of meaning. So it was really, it was a liberal arts education, I think, for me, that made
your
that
liberal arts education.
My liberal arts education, yeah.
That helped you come up with this name that is now known worldwide, this hugely successful language learning company. You actually sold the company in 2006?
Early 2006, it was sold to another group of investors, and then since has gone public. They took it public, yeah.
Our guest today on Virginia Insight, architect and co-founder of Rosetta Stone, Eugene Stoltzfus, political scientist and president of Washington and Lee University, Ken Ruscio, plus the president and founder of the private employment agency Robbins Staffing Solutions, Joyce Robbins. If you have a story about how a liberal arts education has affected your life or that of someone you know, we'd love to hear it. You who are listening are welcome to join us here on Virginia Insight. 888-WMRA Talk is the easy way to remember our number, or if you prefer, 888-967-2825. Joyce Robbins, it seems to me that both of these gentlemen sitting across from you were talking about how a liberal arts education creates a quality of thinking. Now, we're going to talk more, I think, about Ken Ruscio's philosophy that the value goes far beyond economic. But when we're talking to somebody who helps people find work, that's largely an economic issue. What do you have to say about this idea of ways of thinking being different and, because they're different, being valuable?
I think it's certainly important, and I do believe in it, and I liked your comments, Ken. But I'm also speaking to the side from the or speaking about the employment side, which I see quite often. And I think employers often are driven by economics, of course, but they're driven by I need something instant. I don't have time to wait around for someone to figure things out necessarily. They want someone that's already had this experience before, and so they can hit the ground running. Whether that's good or bad, I certainly think they do believe that, or that's good, or they think that way. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that I often try and convince people to think out of the box a little bit and consider someone that doesn't have the exact credentials that they're looking for, but maybe have more of a liberal or varied background. And it's not always an easy sell. Although I've done it, I'm happy to say.
You know, and I think, Joyce, too, I'm not sure it's either or. You know, I think to take the case that Eugene was talking about a minute or so ago, you had somebody who knew the technology. You had mm-hmm. somebody who understood language. You had somebody who was the attorney who could understand how to get the right patents and trademarks and licensing and all of that. And they came together in a way that made the whole greater than the sum of its parts. And to me, that really is what a liberal arts education is all about. It's not that no one comes with any particular education to the table. In fact, there's a lot of expertise that individuals will bring. There's a lot of depth to their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that creative process of thinking of things in new ways and devising new solutions to old problems that we really aspire to with the liberal arts.
We have this comment on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. This is from Andy, who offers a quote that he says he got from a recent New York Times article about liberal arts colleges being forced to evolve with the market. And the quote says, "It's true that research tying college majors to salaries can make the generic liberal arts degrees look unappealing. Mm-hmm. But technical training can become obsolete and students are likely to change careers several times. These liberal arts schools argue that you are better off both in life and work simply learning to think." Our guests, you can probably tell from the music that we have to pause for the break, but I'd like you to respond to Andy's post, and I'm taking it he agrees with this comment from the New York Times. We'll ask you more about that when we continue here on Virginia Insight in 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Here in the Insight Studio, the head of a Harrisonburg-based architectural firm, as well as the co-founder of the language learning company Rosetta Stone. His name is Eugene Stoltzfus. Plus, Joyce Robbins, president of Robbins Staffing Solutions, and president of Washington and Lee University, Ken Ruscio. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. Who wants to take a shot at our comment on Facebook from Andy that we got just before the break?
I would be happy to.
This is Eugene.
Eugene, yes. Interesting comment there in the New York Times. What I want is a programmer that has a liberal arts education. Because programming is not just technical. It's thinking about the whole program and what it does. I mean, one of the most satisfying parts of the work at Rosetta Stone, just to go back to that example, when I mentioned the lawyer, the economist, the architect, and the computer scientist working on the program, what I mean to be saying is working on the actual program. Mm-hmm. The lawyer also did lawyering, and the architect also helped to renovate the new building and so on.
These were the careers of the co-founders of Rosetta Stone.
Of the co-founders, the people who, after the initial prototype was made, which was a very small little program, actually developed the program. And, for instance, John Fairfield, my brother-in-law, he happened to be fluent in French and German and has since studied Swahili and Nepali. His ability to understand language learning made him a fantastic programmer. The background of all of these people bringing these backgrounds made the Rosetta Stone into something that nobody predicted or had any idea could be invented. In other words, it wasn't something that somebody had a vision and then they went and implemented. It was starting somewhere and then working. And we worked together. Mm-hmm. And very shortly after we started the program, started developing the program, we brought a linguist in to look at the program. None of us were linguists at that time. The company later brought in a professional capacity, more linguists and teachers and so on. But initially, we had a linguist come and look, and her main comment was, why didn't a linguist think of this? A linguist didn't think of this because it was outside of the box.
Yeah.
Linguists were not thinking in the kinds of ways that modern technology could be used to teach language. They were thinking in other ways. They were thinking in more traditional ways. So Rosetta Stone had to come from initially, the initial idea came from non-linguists because it came from what worked. And we were in the unique position of being able to test our own work. It was a really unique thing because we could develop the program in English. We could develop it in French or German, which all of us spoke some of. But you put it in Russian or you put it in Japanese, we could test it on ourselves. So what I mean to be painting here is an effort that didn't follow script. It was developed because of the skills that came together, the passion that people had to do something that worked. That was always the test. Does it work? It was audacious. And I think that kind of confidence is fostered by a liberal arts education, by knowing something about science, knowing something about literature and history, and the references in the office to economics, to history, to science that, you know, floated around among us was what produced the audacious program.
And Eugene, I would say that sounds absolutely great. And you know, curiosity, creativity, you know, the thinking of the outside of the box, hearing what others have to say, you know, bouncing off those ideas. All of that are, those are the kinds of things that you hope students learn, not from subject matter, but through the interaction with others as well.
The last line of this quote from the Times article that Andy sent us says, "These liberal arts schools argue you are better off both in life and work simply learning to think."
Well, I would certainly agree, Tom. In ways that we may not always expect, one of the ways that I've tried to describe what happens at a place like Washington and Lee is that students learn together what they can't learn alone. And that opens up a whole set of things that go beyond subject matter. It's trusting each other. We have a wonderful honor system at Washington and Lee where students have to respect each other and trust each other. Alumni tell us that that has a tremendous impact on their lives after they graduate. So it's learning how to think, but it's also learning how to interact with people who are different than you and people who think differently than you and may have different strengths and weaknesses than you do.
Joining us now from her office in Elkton, Virginia, a woman who oversees recruiting operations across the southeastern United States for one of the world's largest pharmaceutical concerns, from Merck and Company, Celia Miller. Thank you for making time for us.
Hello. Thank you for including me.
Ms. Miller, I don't know if you heard the introduction of a few minutes ago, but just in case you didn't, let me let you know that here in studio with me, I have architect and co-founder of Rosetta Stone, Eugene Stoltzfus, political scientist and president of Washington and Lee University, Ken Ruscio, and the president and founder of the private employment agency Robbins Staffing Solutions, Joyce Robbins. So getting you into this conversation about the value of liberal arts, it seems to me, Celia, that in a place where science and technology are such a driver in your industry, you have to wonder, is there a place for anyone with a liberal arts education?
Yes, actually, there's quite a few areas where someone coming in with liberal arts degree, you know, can be really successful, you know, at Merck and for other employers, other type of manufacturing employers, you know, in the state of Virginia and throughout the country. The one thing that we have found is really the ability to learn. And so if you take a new graduate coming out with a liberal arts degree, they've had the opportunity to learn about many different topics, and they're also interested in many different topics. So they take that ability to learn, come into a workplace like Merck, and we're changing our work environment all the time. So it's a very dynamic work environment. And, you know, you have an individual that comes in with that type of degree. Well, they're already interested in many different topics. They're used to learning lots of different things. And so that ability to learn will make them a very successful employee.
You know, this is Ken. I was just listening to someone from Merck talk about the value of liberal arts education. And it reminded me of something that I want to attribute it to an author, Andrew Del Banco. And he was talking recently about the difference between education in science and technology and education in the humanities. And he was saying, you know, there's this idea about how science progresses and people learn something in science and technology and they pass it on. And science and technology progresses and it accumulates in terms of knowledge. But he said, you know, the humanities have a much harder time making that case. You know, what Socrates and Aristotle talked about with the American, but the human condition, we haven't really much improved upon the human condition from the time of the Iliad and the Odyssey and Homer's talk about wars and things like that. So in some ways, the sciences and the technology folks have an easier case to make about the progress of education. But the humanities are constantly looking at the quality of the human condition. And humans sometimes haven't gotten much better in what they do. But it is interesting to hear the discussion at Merck about, in the midst of the science and technology, they want people who can come in who are curious, who can acquire knowledge, who can continue how to learn and push the boundaries of science as well as the human condition.
Well, one of the interesting things that I've seen during my tenure at Merck, which has been many years, we've upgraded our processes. We're automating processes. We have equipment. We have cutting-edge equipment and equipment that wasn't available 10 or 15 years ago. So there's a lot of change. And not only is the change just limited to the process, it's also limited. It also expands to who you might be working with. So, you know, we're recruiting people literally from all over the United States and actually some individuals from, you know, other countries. So we have a very diverse workforce. So you bring someone into that workforce that has a liberal arts degree, well, they've had they have knowledge, history, maybe a broader look at different cultures, and just an interest in, you know, different people that are different from themselves in many different facets. And so it's that diversity of thought. And then being interested in and not afraid of learning something new and change. And that's what we've seen that's been very valuable at our plant site here in Elkton.
Well, to you who are listening, we hear a lot these days that when it comes to politics, people tend to only talk to and listen to those who already share their own point of view. But I wonder if anything similar goes on with educational background. Do you have friends whose educations are completely different than yours? Do you notice them, well, seeing the world in a way that seems unusual to you? Call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. I guess what I'm asking, can engineers and English majors really get along? 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Celia Miller at Merck at your facility in Elkton, we only have you on the line for a couple more minutes, so maybe the way I should phrase the question to you is, can English majors and scientists get along? Do they talk to each other? Do they understand each other?
One of the tools that we at Merck use is inclusion and making sure that everyone is able to give their point of view or, solution to a problem, or maybe it's a new idea on how to optimize a piece of equipment or a process or a business process. So yes. So we have formalized and we actually have more of a formal business process to ensure that you do have the chemical engineer and the English major talking, because in order for us to be successful as a company, we have to have everyone's input, and because everyone can add value. And having this formal program basically gives us kind of the platform to ensure that happens.
Celia, this is Joyce. I would be curious to know, do you all have any statistics that indicate how what the ratio is in your organization as to liberal arts hirees and others?
We probably have access to that, Joyce. And I actually went back and I was doing a little bit of just evaluating of the number of individuals that I've hired. And we have hired, I want to say probably in our operations area, where we've been doing most of the hiring this year because we are actually ramping up, I would say probably 5% of our hires have had what you would consider to be non-traditional degrees for a facility like Merck. And I would say, degrees in more of, a Bachelor of Arts degree versus a chemical engineering or a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry and Biology. Mm-hmm. And it's mainly because, in the feedback that I personally have gotten, it's mainly because we're willing, to step out there and make these hires because of the ability of these particular individuals to learn our process.
Oh, that's great. A wonderful story.
Celia, if there's a liberal arts person out there, whether a recent college graduate or somebody who's looking to change jobs at some point, and they want to present themselves to somebody like you, a senior recruiter at Merck, what should they know about how their resume appears or what they say about why somebody with a liberal arts background could work successfully for you?
So the most important thing for them would be to visit our career website at Merck. And make sure they create a profile. It's very straightforward. It's www.merck.com/careers. And then obviously, make sure that their degree is listed on their resume, and then that they also provide whatever work experience, whatever clubs, leadership, teamwork, those are all things that are very important to us as we are looking for employees.
Celia Miller, senior recruiter for the international pharmaceutical company Merck. She's based in Elkton, Virginia, and her region is the southeastern United States. Celia, thank you so very much for making time for us on Virginia Insight.
Thank you for including me.
Have a great day. Still with us here, we have Ken Ruscio, who is author of the book The Leadership Dilemma in Modern Democracy. For almost 7 years now, he has also served as president at Washington and Lee University. For about the same length of time, Eugene Stoltzfus has headed up the Harrisonburg-based architectural firm that carries his name. But for about a decade and a half before that, he helped run the international language learning company Rosetta Stone. And for more years than I can count, Joyce Robbins has been helping people find jobs. For about 7 years now, she has run her own agency, the Charlottesville-based employment and executive search firm Robbins Staffing Solutions. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Eugene, I have a quote here. Liberal arts, what it brings to the work world, is helping us to understand human nature. End quote, attributed to Eugene Stoltzfus. Tell me more about that.
Well, I'll have to try to follow up. It's a very interesting concept to me that we're talking about not just facts and not just knowledge. excuse me. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about attitude. And we're talking about the meaning of life.
Oh, good, because we have a break, so you'll have time to get some water and clear your throat.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk more about education and human nature and understanding human nature, which I'm always looking for clues on. There may be some people listening who are as well. If you listening want to participate, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. We'll be back in just a bit more than 60 seconds. Our guests on this edition of Virginia Insight, architect and co-founder of Rosetta Stone, Eugene Stoltzfus, political scientist and president of Washington and Lee University, Ken Ruscio, plus the president and founder of the private employment agency based in Charlottesville, Robbins Staffing Solutions. Her name is Joyce Robbins. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. We're talking about understanding human nature, and Eugene is going to lead us there. So, and the connection between that and a liberal arts education.
Yeah, liberal arts education. I was saying, it's not just facts. It's not just knowledge. It's about relationships. It's maybe about developing character. And for me, not as an academic, but as a participant, an innocent participant going through the liberal arts education world. For me, it was very interesting to, particularly when I came back to college after I had been out, I came back with a completely different attitude and my approach to history and literature and psychology. I was a psychology major, was really to help me to figure out what my life was about and, you know, understanding my human nature and what is the meaning of life for me. So I kind of want to put the question to President Ruccio here about liberal arts education, let's say, in America. In the latter part of the 20th century, we had visitors from the East, you might say. We had coming into our culture some interest in Zen. We had interest in meditation. We had interest in Tibetan Buddhism. Transcendental meditation came into our society. It didn't come in through academia. It came in through who knows what, personal interest, whatever. It's now become almost mainstream with some psychologists, for instance. There's some really profound recent work has been done by Dr. Aben Alexander, a man who basically lost his brain function and had extraordinary experience during the time that he was in a coma for 7 days. And he now speaks very articulately. He's a neurosurgeon. He speaks very articulately about that experience.
Actually, Eben's been a guest on this show a couple of times, most recently just a few weeks ago, and I apologize for interrupting, but all of a sudden our phone lines are filling up. So could you
get to the question? is there a place for the Eastern contemplative arts in the liberal arts curriculum?
Oh, well, sure. But let me go back to how you got to that question. And that was your experience coming back into an educational setting. And, you know, it is true that education is wasted on the young. I mean, it is we hear that a lot, that, you know, when individuals go off and they get some experience and they come back and they wish they had taken this course, they wish they had looked at that. But I think those are questions that come in that in any good liberal arts setting, whether it's Zen, whether it's Eastern culture, whether it's a different religion, whether it's different, that those are explored and they're contested and they're talked about and they're examined. Sure, absolutely. Those are things that could be looked at.
Ken, I think that was a great point that you made about we say that education is wasted on the young. I just had a gentleman in my office a few days ago that was 54 years old, and he's just finished his second year of college. He has an associate's degree. And he was so motivating to talk to. Mm-hmm. And he said he went to college early on in his youth and wasted away 3 years. And so now he's gone back, and he was so motivated and so inspiring. The problem may be, though, will he be able to, if he does want to work, finding that great position that will keep him motivated and inspired.
The value of liberal arts is our focus this hour. Got any insights to share? A question for our guests? Phone lines, we got at least one open right now at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Glad to see that Laura and Madison decided she was going to share her voice with us. Laura, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Eugene Stoltzfus, Ken Ruccio, and or Joyce Robbins, please.
You're welcome. My question is directed toward Robin. And Robin, I have...
Joyce Robbins.
Joyce Robin, I'm sorry. Pardon me. First of all, I have a Bachelor of Science degree with a double major in broadcast journalism and political science. I've been out of the workforce for the most part for about 20 plus years, raising my 3 children. And as there approaching the end of high school. I'm trying to get back into the job force and wanted to see, in your opinion, what I could do with that.
So we have somebody who has sort of a hybrid. It sounds like part of her education was political science. Part of it was a technical skill, broadcast journalism. And Laura, is one of the first things that you're looking at is how you put together a resume when you haven't worked full-time for a number of years?
Right, right.
Joyce?
Well, absolutely. That may be a challenge for you, but that would be your first step. And, of course, I would always recommend contacting a staffing agency because we certainly can advise you on how to put your information together.
But, Joyce, you must run into this with some frequency. People who spent a number of years raising their children have professional degrees or liberal arts degrees and say, okay, I want to get back to full-time work. How do I get there?
Absolutely. Well, in all honesty, the quickest and best way through our agency that we have seen people succeed is when they come to us, we can find maybe a temporary position or a short-term position. And we tell our client if the individual qualifies in the way of they have computer skills or whatever the basics are that's required, they can start that job and succeed there and then build a little bit of resume. So it's not like they haven't been in the workforce, even if they've done a temporary assignment. So that helps to build your resume and also make contacts. Just being on a job takes you ahead because then you're meeting people, you're getting back into the workforce. So,
Laura, how many children do you have?
I have three children.
So someone like Laura, it might actually be realistic to say that for many years now, she's been a chief executive officer of running a household. But on your resume, what do you put down if you haven't worked full time for a long time? Outside the home.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have had people show me resumes that have been very creative, and they showed how that the duties and things they performed at home and in volunteer work actually translated into project management, different things that they had done, leadership, all kinds of things that translate into the workplace.
Laura, thanks so much for your call, and best of luck with the job search.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Next to Harrisonburg, Jay, thank you for calling us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
I have a comment. And first, I'm 55, and yes, education is wasted on the young. I had a degree in communications and sociology back. I graduated in 79 from JMU. But I have a comment. One thing that I've learned that liberal arts education deals more with vocation, but I'm not just talking about vocation in a technical sense, but in a spiritual, religious sense. Not just what you do, but who you are. I mean, my degree wasn't exactly the most marketable, but I don't think I would have went any other way.
Jay, tell us again what your degree was in.
My degree was in communications, radio, and it was also in sociology. I've done a lot of retail for many years. I'm going to get some more training now, like you said, that education is wasted on the young. At 55, I'm going for a new vocation. I'm going to be trained first as a nursing assistant and then get into nursing.
Ken Ruscio?
Well, Jay, I absolutely agree, not surprisingly. You know, when we talk at Washington & Lee about what we hope our students get after 4 years, we hope they get a job. Yeah, we hope they find a place to live and all of that. But we really hope they develop a commitment to something greater than the self. And there's a lot of meaning that comes in the educational enterprise. A professor professes. There's actually a religious root to that title that professors have. And so it really is about how do you want to lead your life? How do you want to make choices in your life? And so it is great to hear you affirm that.
Jay, can you hold on for a moment?
Sure.
We have another call coming in from Harrisonburg, and it looks from the notes that I'm getting like Walt may have something to say that you want to hear. Maybe you guys will talk to each other. Walt, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
This is a general question. The conversation has been very stimulating. I just want to kind of share quickly my experience. I'm 51 years old now and went back to school after 4 years in the military, felt the call, vocational call to ministry, studied the liberal arts, got a bachelor's religion, went on to seminary, and then after about 10 years in the ministry, decided I wanted to, you know, repackage or retool. So I went back and got an MPA, Master in Public Administration, and decided I just wanted to become a professional student. So I've been working at JMU for the last 8 years or so, and got another master's in history while there. And now my question is, you know, with this, and I just love school. I love the liberal arts. I love how it's made me think critically, et cetera. But now I'm thinking about how do I repackage myself for kind of the next next step. So that's my question. You know, with all this kind of, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I owe nothing for my education other than my time, of course. But I mean, in terms of expense wise, I've been very fortunate. I got graduate assistantships and all of that kind of thing. So I don't have any debt. But I'm looking and thinking, okay, at my age, how do I pull all of these kind of pieces together? And I'd like to stay in higher ed. So that's my question.
Walt, I commend you, number one, for all that you've achieved. I think that's absolutely fantastic. If you were, and you mentioned higher ed, so my comment may not be correct for you, but I would suggest you think through what are the things you enjoy most? What are the topics that really motivate you and excite you? And then explore, if you will, the vocation or jobs that are possible using that information. In other words, if you are really turned on by maybe teaching others or something like that, explore how you can get permanent work or a job in that area. Yeah. So that would be my recommendation. You have to do some study on yourself there.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, is there, you know, I've not been able to like find a kind of a place where there's this multi-interdisciplinary kind of spot, you know, that kind of brings all of these pieces together. It's like if I wanted to do a doctorate, it seems like I've got to pick, you know, either history or something in public administration or something like that. And I've been very fortunate to use all of these areas, these disciplines that I've studied in. That's been good, but I'm looking for just kind of just one more piece to tie it all together, and that's kind of what I've been struggling with. And I know you guys
Ken Ruscio from Washington Lee University, it occurs to me that there used to be degrees people could get, even doctorates in what was called something like liberal studies. Does that still exist?
You know, I think it may, Tom. I'm not sure. I've run across it recently, but certainly they did exist.
So, Walt, it sounds like what you, interdisciplinary
yeah,
studies?
Interdisciplinary yeah, interdisciplinary studies.
And Walt, it sounds like what you know you'd like to do is something related to teaching?
Yes, correct. That's correct.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And hold on just a second. I think Jay had a follow-up question he wanted to ask. And, Jay, we're running out of time, so I wanted to get back to you.
Oh, I just had a quick comment. I think one of the problems is that education has become a commodity. And I don't think it was originally intended to be that. It's like something you pick up at a drive-through window. And it's almost like what he's talking about, what he's trying to find a program that encompasses all of his interests. Education isn't something, a product that we can buy and sell.
Jay and Walt, both, you've been fascinating to listen to. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us on Virginia Insight. I noticed the president of Washington and Lee University nodding his head to the commodity comment.
Well, one of the things that is a pet peeve these days is when they refer to those who go to college as consumers. We prefer to think of them as students. Purchasing an education is different than investing in an education. So we're not happy when we hear that they're consumers of education.
I know, Eugene, that in the 60 seconds we've got left, you're going to give away at least one more secret about understanding human nature.
Okay, you asked. The best route for us each in understanding human nature is to go to the closest source for human nature. That's ourselves. And I'm not talking about how wonderful we are or what we can become. But, you know, the old saying, know thyself. That's really what liberal arts is about. If you're going to understand human nature, it's a way to begin to understand yourself by looking at humans broader. But that's why I bring up the idea of the contemplative arts, because ultimately, to understand human nature, you need to begin to see yourself in the stillness that these contemplative arts bring you. Not because, again, not because you're so wonderful, but just because of the way you really are. And whether
I see a lot of nodding of heads in the studio here, Eugene. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're going to have to ask you all back to see what your colleagues here are thinking. Our guests have been author of the book, The Leadership Dilemma in Modern Democracy, as well as president of Washington and Lee University, Ken Ruscio, the founder and president of Robbins Staffing Solutions, Joyce Robbins, and co-founder of the language learning company Rosetta Stone, who's now back to his first love, running his own architectural firm, Eugene Stoltzfus. Plus, earlier in the program by phone, senior recruiter for the pharmaceutical concern Merck & Company, Celia Miller. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about all of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.